Extra Cheese podcast with me, Sophia, and my super lovely fiance Pat.
Oh, it's a spicy intro
or
for
Patrick.
Me.
Yeah.
Either one, I don't mind. Yeah. You know.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm fine. You know, just a bit tired from work.
Yeah, same.
It's been a slog these past 2-3 weeks.
Yeah, it's been tough going back from being off for 4 months.
Yeah, being able to do whatever we wanted to, standing on our feet for about 10-11 hours a day.
And we haven't really had any days off together as well, so we...
No, we haven't, have we?
Just been working, go home and watch TV, eat, sleep, repeat, all of that.
Yeah, all the exciting stuff, you know.
And like, you know, the weather is really horrible and grey, and I feel like the energy is really like low and stuff, so I guess like, you know...
Yeah, you know, but we'll be fine, we'll get through it.
We get through
it. We've got an exciting movie to talk about, ain't we?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, thanks so much for tuning in, to our B-movie cult film / giallo / horror film
exploitation
podcast, as usual.
Yeah, all the above.
All the above, yeah. And today, actually, we're gonna talk about my choice of film.
Yeah.
Which is the incredible one-chick hit squad film, Coffee.
It's the colour.
Coffee is the colour, from 1973, directed by Jack Hill.
My name's Coffin. I know what you want to, and you're gonna get it. This is the end of your rotten life, you dope pusher!
That was a little snip trailer.
It was indeed, yeah.
God, I love the soundtrack of this film.
Yeah, it's pretty special, ain't it?
We will talk about it in just a little bit, but we're just going to talk about the synopsis, so you know what it's about. So the film follows Coffee, a night shift nurse leading a double life. When her younger sister overdoses, Coffee turns vigilante and vows to get revenge on those... Sorry, my language. Motherfucking dope pushers. So it's like a revenge film.
Yeah, it is, ain't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, female revenge film.
Yeah, so her little sister got caught up in drugs, basically.
Yeah, her little sister, Lou Bell.
Lou Bell.
Overdosed on, as they call it, heroin.
Heroin, yeah. And
she's like basically had enough of it, you know, so she just goes wild, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does go wild. She seeks up all this, like,
pimps, pushers,
dope
users,
users,
all sorts, isn't it?
All sorts. So this film is a blaxploitation / action thriller film.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Do you want to tell a little bit about blaxploitation?
I'll try my best.
Yeah, for those people who don't know what blaxploitation
is.
I'm
not very, very well versed on it, but I've been doing a little bit of research.
Yeah.
So, like, the blaxploitation films were centred around, like, black casts, and they were usually set in and around sort of urban areas and locations. There are all kinds of subgenre films made as well.
Yeah.
So, like, revenge, kung fu, horror, comedy... Like Blackula.
Blackula.
Actually, one blaxploitation film I want to mention is Sweet Sweetbacks.
Oh, yes, yeah.
So it's actually called Sweet Sweetbacks Badass Song. And that one and Shaft, actually, are just two of the key examples of blaxploitation films. They really kickstarted the scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just... There's like so much to read about it online.
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting to watch about it as
well.
How it's just not like blaxploitation from, like, you know, the 70s, like kind of like when those film like fired up and stuff.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
It's way, the history goes way back.
It does. Yeah, it really does. Yeah. And I mean, they contain sort of like key themes as well, like and style and messages that became sort of staples mm-hmm. of those types of films.
Yeah.
And the theme of fighting the man, and you know, it's the man we've got to fight against. And,
yes, yeah.
And incorporating black power ideology, mm-hmm. which allowed black actors to be the stars of their own narratives.
Yeah.
Compared to like other films where usually there'd be like a sidekick or like...
Yeah.
Probably die first in horror movies. That's quite a cliched one, ain't it?
That's the thing, because, you know, Hollywood was so kind of like whitewashed, you know, and as you say, it was always like, you know, black people was always in the background or they were just like, like a sidekick.
And, yeah, and they were too scared to tell the black people's story.
Yeah.
And yeah, one of the other main things for a blaxploitation film was the soundtracks were mostly funk and soul music.
Yeah, it's like one of the first, you know, like...
Yeah, it's the only sort of time, really, that they've ever done that for an entire soundtrack, you know?
Yeah, and there are so many good soundtracks, like in so many good
blaxploitation films. Yeah, I mean, Coffey's got a great one. There's Superfly.
Superfly.
That's a brilliant one, that.
Shaft.
Oscar-winning Shaft.
Isaac Hayes.
Yeah, but yeah, the whole thing of blaxploitation, you know, because it came up, you know, in America you had the civil rights movement... and then it went on to like black power and black is beautiful and this really sort of what's the word I think what is it
what is it? It
inspired
thing. Inspired
really
yeah.
inspired these films and like everything else to really sort of celebrate
the black community
yeah.
It was their time to be in the spotlight for once
you know? But not in a negative way but I mean not all people were actually people of color were actually celebrating it. They actually thought it was quite a negative thing
because
even though that there was like say Pam Grier in the lead role in a movie they were still seeing you know black people being portrayed as the pimps and the
prostitutes
and stuff like the villains and all that sort of thing. So there was like there are sections of people that didn't agree with it still and that's sort of what led to the end of blaxploitation at the end of the 70s was people just sort of like going against it really and that's why it died out.
But yeah, the film is directed by Jack Hill, and we know you know like Jack Hill from before, I was going to say. No, but he made a lot of other films as well.
Yeah, a lot of ones I haven't seen, actually.
It is Switchblade Sisters, Big Bird Cage, The Big Dollhouse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're all kind of like exploitation films, like, you know, kind of women in prison-esque films, you know?
Yeah, he had a lot of those films where he sort of, he was very stuck to sort of genres. So he's got his women in prison films. He's got blaxploitation.
Yeah.
The girl gang films.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've only ever seen Coffee. Yeah, so. Oh, no, yeah, Foxy Brown, sorry. I always get those two mixed up.
Yeah, and I always mix them up with, like, kind of Roger Corman. I feel very, like, similar in what they do.
Yeah, I mean, it's just those people of the time, really, and those in B-movies exploitation and stuff. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I'm sure they were friends.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Probably. As we said before, it's written and directed by Jack Hill, a director whose name will forever be associated with films that feature strong, ethnically diverse and sexually liberated women in leading roles.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, sort of, you know, we've mentioned the films already, but like The Big Birdcage, The Big Dollhouse, Foxy Brown.
Yeah, Coffee, Switchblade Sisters.
Yeah. So a lot of these films are sort of now considered to be feminist works, actually.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, which definitely. He does say that he does consider himself to be a feminist.
Yeah.
But it was his work with blaxploitation that really cemented his status in the industry as someone who had the skills and know-how and desire to give the audience what they wanted. Even if he didn't feel qualified to handle black characters and lifestyle on that level of reality, like being a white man.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I always thought, like, you know, because I thought, like, it was a black man who made, like, those kind of movies.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, yeah.
So I was so surprised it was actually a white man.
Yeah, because he said he felt that the black writers and directors, that they should have, like, the opportunities of success in the genre.
Yeah.
But he said the reason he did it was because Larry Gordon, who was the head of production of... What was it called? AIP,
American Industry Pictures?
Might have been that, yeah, yeah. he said he wanted to create a black woman's show.
Yeah.
But Jack Hill said he'd only do it if Pam Grier was the lead. But I think they've actually said, like, the reason they wanted to make the film really was because they wanted a film to compete against Cleopatra Jones,
yeah,
which is a very similar film.
It's a very similar film. I haven't seen that one.
No,
but I heard it's Tamara Dobson, I think, stars in it. She's amazing as well.
Yeah, and I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if it was Jack Hill that one or if Pam Grier was meant to star in that one. I remember hearing something about that.
Yeah, I'm not really sure.
No.
Maybe we should have investigated a bit more.
I know, but there was so much to investigate.
Yeah, it was.
It's a big film to unravel, it turns out.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, definitely. There's so much. I was so surprised over how much it was.
Yeah,
about
yeah.
the whole genre and about this film
as
well.
Yeah, it's really surprising, actually.
Yeah. So here we come to the main stars of the film.
Mm, yeah.
And the superstar of the film is Pam Grier.
She is indeed, yeah.
Yeah, the most incredible woman on earth.
Mm, yeah, she's wonderful.
She's super cool.
Mm.
She's super gorgeous. And you probably know her from Quentin Tarantino's film, Jackie Brown.
Yeah, I think that's the first film I remember seeing her in.
I think so as well. But I actually think I saw her first in Jawbreaker.
Oh,
remember
she
that film?
That?
Yeah. She's the police detective woman.
Oh, God.
Called Vera Cruz.
I have a vague memory of it, yeah, but
yeah, she's really good in that one.
Mm.
Yeah, so yeah, Pam Grier.
What a life she's had.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Crazy.
When we were researching about stuff.
Yeah.
About her.
Yeah.
About her life, we had our jaws open. I couldn't even believe it. I just couldn't stop thinking about it when I went to bed after reading it.
I know, it's eventful.
She's a hell of a woman.
Yeah, she's strong. After reading that, she's made it through a lot.
Yeah.
In her life.
So what can you say something that happened in her life that kind of affected
her? Well, yeah, I mean, she was date raped by someone. Yeah, I didn't really want to start on a down note, but
no.
I thought it was kind of important, you know.
No, but she, you know, she grew up she did really well, you know, in school and things like that.
Dad was in the military and around a lot. She said she's lived in England and then all across America and stuff and Europe.
Yeah, and she, I mean, trigger warning, she got sexually abused by this group of boys when she was 6 years old.
No, she almost did.
Almost did,
but some sort of electrician stopped him.
Yeah.
And then when she was 18, she got date raped by a guy.
Yeah.
But she was going out with someone else at the time. And when she came home and told him, he said to her that she was tainted and he left her.
Oh, my God.
So this is a sort of common theme in her life is bad relationships with men, or at least they start well and then they end bad. So some sort of basketball player she was going out with didn't end well.
She
the most high profile relationship she had was with, she went out with Freddie Prinze, actually.
Yeah, Freddie Prinze. Yeah.
Who is, in fact, Freddie Prinze Jr.'s dad.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
I thought it couldn't have been a coincidence.
No.
But then also I guess the most high profile one was with Richard Pryor.
Oh, yeah.
Which sounded like a really crazy relation.
She also is off, she's Afro-American, but she's got some Filipino in there, Chinese in there, I think.
Native American
as well.
A lot of stuff, ain't there? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff.
Create that wonderful woman.
But yeah, she went into acting.
Yeah, so she said initially she went to college she wanted to be a doctor, I guess because of her mum being a nurse.
Yeah, and that's also her inspiration for, because, she's playing a nurse in Coffee.
In Coffee, yeah, yeah.
And that she said she was channeling her mother who used to be a nurse.
Yeah.
Because her mother used to work very long hours in the hospital.
Yeah, yeah.
And used to work her ass off to
Yeah, it's
put
like
bread
a
on
inspiration
the table, you know?
In life and in film.
And same with Foxy Brown. She was channeling her aunt's money.
Oh, okay.
Or Menon, sorry. She also said, people have been asking her about, what she thinks about the nude scenes.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And Pam Grier, I'm going to just quote what Pam Grier said about that. She said, being nude in those movies, I was trying to help men to understand. Society created this mystery about the vagina, the breasts. When you create a mystery, people want to see it and attack it if they can't have it. So I was here's the mystery. I hope I bore you and you never get hard on again.
I can see where she's coming from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's just a really tough woman, you know?
She is, in a way, like we've said, she's gone through a lot in her life, you know, bad relationships, and but she's always like come through it.
Yeah.
Like when she was in Coffee, she was only 23 at the time.
I know, it's nuts.
And that was only her, like, technically, it was like her first, well, second leading role.
Yeah.
But only her third film.
But she also did a lot of films that year, didn't she? 1973.
Yeah, I think there was three films, yeah.
It's like Foxy Brown.
Black Mama, White Mama.
Yeah.
And there was one other one as well, which slips my mind.
She became cinema's first female action star, actually.
Yeah, and she did, yeah.
The first black female action star and one of cinema's few headlining female action stars.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's quite a title to have, ain't it?
Yeah,
it's understandable, though. I mean, seeing her in Coffee, I never would have thought she had only been acting in sort of three movies. I mean, her first movie, she was just a background person.
Yeah.
I wouldn't believe it.
No.
She's incredible.
Yeah, she's really...
She makes the character so realistic and believable. As and well. You really, like, you know...
She is so brave. She's charismatic. She's tough, like a tough working woman. And she's using her brain and body and bravery to locate and attract criminals who preyed upon the black community.
Like
in the film, you know?
Yeah, she's using, you know, her sex appeal against men.
Mm.
You know, these lecherous men.
Yeah.
Leering on her.
Yeah.
Or like that moment with Sid Haig when he's just like ripping her nurse's uniform off because he's like, I've got to see it.
Yeah.
It's so, weird.
It's so weird. That's a little bit like B-movie-esque, isn't it? Just to show some boobs, you know?
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's the standard for these films. They just had to do it.
Yeah.
Like they had to put it in and the women had to do it.
Yeah. Well, we have other stars in this film as well. So we have... Booker played her boyfriend, Howard.
Howard the Dick.
Howard the Dick, Brunswick. We have Robert Ducroix, who played the pimp King George.
King George,
yeah, with the frog eye.
He's got his own soundtrack as well.
I know.
I don't know how many, he's not really a villain, but how many people would have their own, like, song in a film, you know?
I know. Like, the entrance of, when he comes out from this car and he just steps his foot on the ground and it's just like... George.
They call him Mr. Cool. What? Don't play him for the fool. That's right. He's the king. The king. King. So fucking cool.
Yeah, he's so cool. He's so cool.
He's dressed like a sort of black futuristic Power Ranger.
Yeah. All these like really bright colours and like the hat's really big and like, you know, cane and everything.
It's fly.
And I just love the face expressions he does like through the whole film.
Yeah,
I almost feel a bit sorry for him.
I know, yeah. There are moments like when they are having their big like food fight thing when he's just like, he's so like embarrassed and annoyed.
Yeah.
And it's so genuine.
It's so genuine, like those big puppy eyes and also like, you know, his girlfriend Meg.
Just
like, oh, you know, I want to be with you. And he's like, oh, you have to wait, baby. I'm doing these drugs now.
Yeah.
that's so funny. We have William Elliot who played Carter, the policeman.
Oh, yeah.
Who's like a childhood friend of Coffee.
Yeah, yeah. They talk about that they had like a romance when they were kids, but they're sort of more just friends now.
Just friends now.
He obviously wants more from her, but she's like, no.
But she's always like, she was like, oh, don't you remember how you used to make me laugh?
He
was talking about nostalgic things.
Yeah, yeah.
But she keeps telling him like how much she wants to like... do something about this, like, dope pushers.
Yeah, she's sort of dropping hints all the time, like, almost like a cry for help, ain't it?
Yeah, kind of like, what would you do, like, you know, if you were so angry or if you wanted to, like...
Yeah, but he's sort of just not really... He's not really on the same wavelength, is he?
No. And then also we have Alan Arbus, who played Arturo Vitroni, and Sid Haig.
Sid Haig.
Omar. Sid Haig... Classic, like, you know, he's
he's a big figure in these films, any exploitation films,
especially especially Jack Hill films as well.
Yeah It's pretty much every film Jack Hill did, Sid Haig was in, including his student films. So like Jack Hill and Francis Ford Coppola went to film school together.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they made like a few student films, and they got Sid Haig in as like one of the actors, and then from then they just just worked together all the time.
Oh, that's so funny. I bet they were having loads of fun, just like films and
yeah,
things
just doing
like
stupid
that.
Stuff. Yeah.
Stupid stuff. Yeah. But obviously, like, Sid Haig has done a lot of other films as well. Mm. I can only think of House of Thousand Corpses, actually.
Yeah, like newer, those are the newer films. Ones. Yeah, that some people might know him from.
Yeah, because it's a very like cult character as well. Like he would go to like, you know, always be on those like movie like horror cons.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's definitely one of those people that you would, if you saw him, you would recognize him from a film you've seen.
Yeah, definitely.
Like because he's been in so many.
Yeah. I really like him. I really like him and Pam Grier together.
I absolutely love him in this film. Yeah. He's just hilarious. He's so hilarious.
He's so funny.
And even though he's meant to be sort of bad and, you know, he beats her up and her friend, like, cut her up, I still don't mind him.
No, that's not mind me either. Because he's supposed to be a really sleazy character, but he's just, I don't know.
He's so over the top.
He's so over the top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sadly, not with us anymore, though.
Yeah, sadly. Mm. Why? Why has it come to this? All the good ones passed away, passes away.
Yeah, I know.
The movie was made for...
only $500,000.
Oh, okay.
Mm.
And how long was it shot for?
18 days.
Jesus.
Yeah, so just over 2 weeks.
Wow.
It's nothing.
That's nothing.
Yeah.
They must have worked so hard on this, like...
You know? You can imagine, yeah. Just like boom, 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 every day.
Boom, yeah, especially like Pam Grier as well.
Mm.
Because she did most of her stunts herself as well.
Yeah, but this is the thing that Jack Hill was saying as well, is that they had a real problem back in the day with doing stunts in these films, like blaxploitation films, because there weren't any people, black people who were stunt people.
Yeah, that's true.
So they had like some real trouble trying to like find, you know, that's why Pam Grier did a lot of her own ones, because they couldn't really find anyone that was doing it, you know.
But she's doing it so well though.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think she did any of the driving. I'm pretty sure that was a man.
Oh, no, that was definitely a man. Do you remember? I was like, okay, that was not Pam Grier in the car, because someone was really big with like a wig on.
Yeah,
like,
he was pretty hefty, yeah.
Very hefty.
And Pam Grier is quite slim, ain't she?
Yeah. And it made me think of, you know, that funny scene we were mentioning before with King George, you know, when he's having the little gathering.
Mm.
And Pam Grier, Coffee, is dressed up as a prostitute.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she's calling herself a Mystique.
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 Yeah.
And
from Jamaica, I think,
yeah,
as well.
From Jamaica, so she puts on this. It's very, very funny.
Of.
Yeah, because obviously, like, she has found out that like, the King George has the smack, like, you know, the drugs.
Yeah, like, he's the main, like, drug dealer, yeah.
Yeah, he's the main drug dealer. So they go to, they have, like, a gathering thing.
Yeah, it's like some sort of like a social event, and they've like, he's brought like along his like women, you know.
Women, yeah, kind of. I'm thinking, oh, it's a brothel or not brothel? Or it's just like a call girl center kind of thing.
Oh, like he's like headquarters that he's got.
Headquarters, yeah.
Yeah, he's got like a professional office for his like brothel, basically.
Yeah.
I guess it's just like an escort agency, you know?
Yeah.
It's a higher class.
And then they have this party where, you know, everyone gathers together.
Yeah, just, stuff. You know, classic, just like loads of men everywhere.
Yeah.
Surrounded by like beautiful women.
But you can sense this kind of like jealousy from the other women towards Coffee.
Yeah,
because
definitely.
She like King George is kind of favorizing her.
She's the new favorite, you know.
Yeah, and King George's girlfriend, I think she is his girlfriend, right? Like, you know.
Yeah, it's like he's woman, you know.
Yeah, he's woman. Yeah. So yeah, Meg gets really jealous and stuff, and she goes over to Coffee, and Coffee is wearing like all white, and then she kind of like accidentally like
smashes a load of glasses that a waiter's holding, and it's like red liquid.
Yeah, red liquid, and she just gets all like
covered.
Oh, yeah, covered. Like her white outfit is like destroyed. So then later on, you know.
But she plays it very cool, doesn't she?
She plays it very, very cool, you know. She goes into the bathroom.
Oh yeah, is this bit?
Yeah, she goes into the bathroom and puts some like razor blades in her hair.
Yeah, in her afro, just
in
hidden.
In her afro, hidden, and you'd be like, "What is she doing?" You know. But apparently, that was like a thing. Like, you know, that Pam Grier actually said that was like she came up with the idea, and it was actually a thing. Like the gang members used to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
In their afros, used to put weapons.
Yeah,
in
the
hair,
girls
like,
used
knives.
To do it. Yeah. Because she said it would always be the first thing that the girls went for was the hair.
The hair.
So they put the blades in there to cut their hands.
Yeah, cut their hands.
It's brutal.
And that's exactly what happens in this scene just after as well. So like King George's woman, Meg, like kind of, you know.
Yeah, because coffee froke salad.
Oh my God, the salad. Yeah. She's like.
Big bowl of salad.
She's like, you don't have any salad. And then it's this massive salad bowl with like dressing. She's just like, kind of like chucks covered it over, covers her. And then, you know, everyone is like, you know, fighting. All the women are fighting, ripping each other's clothes off. His boobs out.
Boobs flying.
All the men are like gathered around them. And Meg cuts her hands on like the razors. And in Coffee's hair. And what I was gonna say, like in the beginning, where I thought of stunt, you know,
you can
definitely see that some of the white women are like white men.
Oh my God, I actually noticed it this time, because I saw like a few of them like tumbling over tables, and I could just see like this guy is just like hairy chest like rolling around. And I was like, oh God, it was funny though.
It was funny. Is there any other scenes like you that kind of stood out for you that you really like? Because I think the salad scene is like one of my favorite ones.
Well, yeah, there was the scene right at the beginning, you know, when she's pretending to be sort of like high on drugs in this guy's car.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy goes into the bar to get this, like, I don't know if he's like, he's just like a drug dealer or something. Yeah. They go back to his place and he thinks he's gonna have a good time with her. But then, you know, she's just been faking the whole time that she was on drugs.
Yeah.
And she just gets a shotgun. Mm. I don't know where she got it from. I don't know if she had it on her somehow, but...
Yeah.
It wasn't in her afro.
It's not in her afro, no.
And then she just gets up, and I can't remember what she says, but it ends with motherfucker.
Yeah. Wait, let me have a look.
Yeah. But then, she gets up, says the line, and then just blows this guy's face off. And then you just see, like, from the back, you just see a hole created in his head, don't you? Which is like the only time, apart from one other scene I want to talk about, where you see like real violence in the film.
Yeah, because you're not like, really ready for that. It's just splat. It's
in the first like 5 minutes of the film as well.
5 minutes of the film. She says, "This is the end of your rotten life, you motherfucking dope pusher."
Yeah,
and then boom.
Yeah.
Sorry about the language.
She just says it in such a like amazing way though. Like,
I know.
Her pronunciation of it.
It's so good.
Yeah.
And then you think after that, it's kind of like, okay, here we go.
Yeah, I mean, you know? It's a good way to get you into the film.
Mm.
It's good, it's like set up for the film.
Definitely.
But yeah, I'd say one of the other sort of scenes that I noticed was the King George death scene.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely brutal.
It's brutal. It's quite sad.
Because
I quite like King George, so kind of way, I don't know why.
I know, you probably shouldn't, but you do, don't you? Because I guess like, because the other people in it, the other like villains, like Mr. Vetroni and...
Oh, they're scum. Like, you know, Mr. Vetroni is like being really racist and really horrible towards Coffee. Like, you know?
Yeah. So the whole thing is that, you know, like Coffee has said that King George sent her to kill Mr. Vetroni.
Yeah.
Just because she wants to get rid of King George.
Mm.
So, yeah, then Vetroni's men get him and put him in a car and are, like taking him somewhere he doesn't know where. And they get him out of the car and like... put a noose around his neck, attach it to the back of the car, and then they just start driving. Well, it's actually King George's driver driving, and he's
like, forced
banging
to drive
on the window, like stop.
Yeah,
but yeah, he just keeps driving, and then after that, for the next like 2 minutes, you just see him driving around, like slamming into things with like King George on the back, just like flip flopping everywhere.
Aww.
Obviously, not the real person. It was
you can see it. It's like a dummy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
around like, the cones like on
yeah,
the side.
Yeah, with Sid Haig just like in almost in tears just
tears,
laughing.
Like laughing, yeah. Well, he's evil, Sid Haig, in this film.
I know, but he's hilarious.
He's hilarious.
He's a funny guy.
Yeah. I mean, another I would almost say the most evil person in this film is almost her boyfriend, Howard.
Howard, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like
twat.
Yeah, such a twat. When it's like at the end, just like, sorry, spoilers here. Coffee finds out that Howard is collaborating, or like, you know,
yeah, he's
together.
Working with him, isn't he?
He's working with his dope pushers.
Yeah, because he wants to be like a congressman. So he's like basically using their money and their influence to get to that position.
Yeah. And also like, you know, her shallow friend Carter is a policeman.
Mm.
His colleague, who's a policeman, is also into it. So it's all like kind of corrupt working together.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's the classic sort of police are in on it, on like organized crime and stuff.
Yeah. And this scene where Howard is a dick.
Yeah.
He completely ignores her. Oh, I've never seen this woman before.
Mm.
Bullshit. Like, obviously, I've seen her, they had sex before.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he says he loves her.
Yeah.
After they have sex.
They had like a really, I think they even had like a pretty serious relationship, because she was like, do you remember when we went, like, you know?
Yeah, I mean, she's like you can see that she's like really in love with him. Yeah. When she's talking to him.
She goes over to his house, the beach house, and then she realizes like another woman there. It's like a white woman as well.
Mm, yeah.
And then
he's almost talked her around, didn't he?
Yeah.
Because she's gone around there basically to like kill him.
Yeah.
But he's like almost talked her around by the end of it.
Mm.
But then, yeah, the woman appears from nowhere and she's just like, well, gonna blow your balls off, ain't I?
Yeah, but the funny bit where he says, which I was just like, oh God, you're such a dick. Mm. I just got so angry.
So manipulative.
He just said like, oh, I can explain. I thought you were dead. It's like,
yeah.
Okay, you're dead. I'm just going to go and like be with another woman now. Or
yeah, I mean, it was the same night as well.
The same night. So it was just like an hour after.
It works fast.
You know? And like, it's just, yeah, it's just really sad because she's saying something like, oh, I loved you. I loved you so much as well.
Yeah.
You know? She's like crying. She's literally really heartbroken.
Yeah.
And then she shoots him between his legs.
Yeah.
Bye bye.
Yeah.
And walks along the beach, you know, and yeah. Quite sad ending, but
yeah, it's a strange mix in this film though of like the violence, I think. It's a mixture between sort of comical and then sort of really ultra violent. So like the blowing off head.
She crashes in the car into Vitrone's house as well.
Yeah, that's like the comical bit, I think.
Yeah, it is for some reason.
The guy with the weird one eye patch thing,
yeah.
Which is like
yeah.
And then, yeah, you got the obvious, like, gratuitous sex and nudity.
Mm.
You know, there's that bit in the bar with the guy with the eye patch when he's threatening that woman to, like, give him the photo or, like, the film roll. And then he, like, for no reason, has got his knife and he just slips her boob out.
Yeah.
And then, like, Sid Haig, like, ripping his nurse's outfit.
Yeah,
open.
That made me feel a bit uncomfortable actually, because you know he's wearing like the balaclava and stuff, and it's very kind of trigger warning-esque. Like, you know, it's very like.
Yeah, there was something about it. I thought it was like really realistic about it.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Because it was like, again, it was like quite comical when they were beating up her friend. I know it sounds bad, but when they were beating up the cop Carter.
Yeah.
Because you could tell they were holding back when they were hitting him.
Yeah.
But then, you know, he turns around and like starts to like undress her and like grabbing her and groping her.
Yeah.
It like really flips every time.
Yeah, no, it does. It's really hard to watch things like that, rape, awful stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, it's very sad scenes in this film as well. You know, when she goes and visits her sister. Lou Bell. And here's kind of like where we find out where Coffey's real name is as well.
Yeah, which I didn't hear that bit at all.
Yeah.
Like, was looking about it afterwards. What is it again? Flower Child?
Coffin?
Flower Child Coffin.
Yeah, Flower Child Coffin.
Yeah, so Coffin is her last name.
Yeah.
That's why everyone calls her Coffey.
Yeah.
And yeah, her first name is Flower Child Coffin.
Yeah, I can't say it. Flower Child
Coffin.
Coffin, God, that's so hard to say.
Yeah, which is a wild name.
Yeah.
Absolutely wild.
And then there's like this other scene when she goes and this is Carter, because obviously this, you know, Sid Haig.
He gets beaten up and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, Carter gets beaten up, so he's like in hospital. Mm. And, you know, she kind of just realises, like, God, I really have to do something about this now. Like,
yeah, it's like the last straw,
it's
basically.
It's the last
ain't it?
Straw, like, you know, she's.
Because he's just a good guy, he's a good cop, isn't he?
He's just a good cop.
He turned down, he's like. Friend, he's like partner who was like trying to get him involved in like taking bribes and stuff, and he wasn't having any of it.
No.
So yeah, she just had enough.
She had enough.
Enough is enough.
She's going the killing spree, but she's so clever. That's what I really like. But this character is just amazing. You know, she's just like works as a nurse and just decided to take her own control over things. You know, take.
Yeah, just, you know, not take any more shit from men, basically, and just, like, stand up for herself as, like, a woman and a black woman.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it's, like, my favourite genre in these types of movies. Mm-hmm. It's, like, the revenge genre, even though sometimes they are a bit hard to watch because they tend to involve, you know, rape, and that's, like, the reason that there is revenge for the woman.
Yeah.
But they always, you know, it's so satisfying.
It's
when they get their revenge.
And it's so good for his time as well.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And now obviously we have, you know, Quentin Tarantino, who got inspired by, like, you know, all of these blaxploitation films for, like, you know, Kill Bill and all of that.
Yeah, it was a funny thing that Pam Grier said was that when she actually auditioned for Pulp Fiction.
Oh, she
first,
did?
Yeah.
Okay.
But she didn't get it, obviously, but then he purposely kept her in mind for when he was going to make Jackie Brown.
Jackie Brown.
Because he basically wrote it with her in mind.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then he got her to come to his office to, like, have a meeting with her.
Yeah.
And there were just posters of, like, Coffee and Foxy Brown on the wall.
Mm.
And she said she thought that he had put those up as, like, kissing her ass.
Oh.
And he said, oh, no, actually, I was thinking about taking them down because I thought it might look really weird.
Yeah. Oh, I bet.
Yeah. But it's just because he's, you know, he's just a massive fan of, like, those films and, yeah, he just appreciates them, you know?
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, I read something about that she was up for auditioning for The Witches of Eastwick as well.
Really?
Or something, yeah. But it was something to do with, like, yeah, Jack Nicholson. No, first it was, like, Bill Murray, who was going to be, like, you know, Jack Nicholson's role.
And, really?
Yeah, or something.
God.
But then he got scrapped away. And then Jack Nicholson came in the picture. And then they cast Angelica Houston, but she wasn't... Because they were a couple back then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But Angelica Houston wasn't, like, the right person. So then...
No, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, so then Cher came.
Oh, yeah.
And then...
She's amazing in that.
Yeah, she's
amazing.
Stunning. Let's do an episode about Cher's films. Because she's a really good actress.
She is, yeah, she is good. And she's been in some really good films, actually.
Yeah, it's really good. I don't know where, maybe I read it wrong, but what was something about that she mentioned?
Well, she was meant to be the Cher character then.
Yeah, the Cher character.
That would have been quite interesting, actually.
Yeah, because I guess Cher character was a little bit, like, not dark featured, but, you know, she had, like, dark hair. Like, you know, I think they wanted someone to stand out from, like, Susan Sarandon and Michelle Pfeiffer.
It would have been
a good balance, I think.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think how it would be to have Pam Grier instead of Cher. I'm not sure.
I think it would have been perfectly fine.
Yeah. But that's the whole thing. Like, we were talking about this before, that, you know, the blaxploitation era kind of died out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, late 70s, yeah.
And also, it was kind of like Pam Grier's career just kind of, like, almost died out as well.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it's, like, her choice to do that, you know?
Yeah.
She did, like, TV shows and things like that. She was having a relationship with Richard Pryor at the time during the 80s as well.
Yeah.
So she was looking after him quite a lot.
Yeah,
because he had a lot of problems,
yeah.
like a drug addict, but he was also, like, suffering from depression and mental illness. She actually taught him how to read as well.
Really?
Yeah, because he didn't.
Oh my God, what a woman!
Yeah, he didn't know how to read.
No.
So when he would do his films, he would sound out the words every time, and that's how he would do his script.
Jesus Christ!
So she taught him how to read.
What a woman!
I know, but yeah, like, eventually she, like, got sick of, like, all the bullshit.
Yeah.
Because he started an affair then with some other woman.
Yeah.
Got her pregnant and then, like, married her.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Jesus.
It's nuts.
God, I'm saying Jesus so much.
Yeah.
But what we're saying about, like, you know, black female action stars.
Mm-hmm.
That whole thing kind of died out after, like, the blaxploitation era as well.
Yeah, it did, yeah.
Because then, you know, the 80s. 90s.
Mm.
In the 90s we had, like, Terminator 2 with what's her name?
She plays Sarah Connor.
Sarah Connor.
I can't remember
white
her real
woman,
name.
You know, like, action star. Oh yeah, 80s we had Alien, Sigourney Weaver, white woman as like a action star as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not until, like, later on
90s we had Pamela Anderson with barbed wire.
Yeah, we did. Anna Nicole Smith in Skyscraper.
God, yeah. Sure.
That's a great B movie.
Is it?
Yeah. Or, I think it's So Bad Is So Bad. It's Not So Bad Is Good.
I don't think I'll be watching it.
But it's Anna Nicole Smith. She's great.
I know. But yeah, anyway. Yeah,
anyway. No, but it's just not, like, many years later, you know, we had, like, Zoe Saldana, we had, like, Halle Berry.
Mm-hmm.
They come up again as, like, you know, black female
superheroes.
Superheroes, yeah.
Even bigger than action stars, I guess, really, you know?
Yeah. It's just so weird with, like, films, how you just can change, like, you know.
Yeah, it can really shift, can't it? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was reading trivia, but it wasn't that much, really, on IMDb. It was more like Mustang, blah blah blah, and I was like
right, okay, yeah,
I was like, okay, if I'm car interested, that would be really interesting and stuff.
Yeah, I think it's because mostly the interesting things about this is, you know, the whole blaxploitation Pam Grier and her career and life.
I mean, we could almost just done like an episode of Pam Grier, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it easily could have done. Yeah. I mean, she said that she's even trying to get someone to make a film about her life. She's like at production places and stuff.
She should. I mean, I've been looking into trying to buy her a biopic book, like autobiography biopic book.
I thought you was going to say you've been looking into getting your biopic sold.
Oh, yeah, me, biopic, yeah. Mine. No, but the autobiography book is, I think it's only available in the States. I'm not sure here.
That's a bit weird.
Yeah, I would love to read it. Mm. Hint, hint, for my birthday.
Yeah, yeah. Surprise.
But one little like trivia that I found interesting was that Vitroni's home was actually the home of the Western movie legend Roy Rogers.
Really?
Yeah. That's crazy. Ah.
Was he still living there at the time?
I have no idea.
How bizarre.
It's really bizarre, yeah. How they were like, I wonder if like Jack Hill was just like, you know, scouting locations.
Yeah, or like...
He, this like, would be perfect for Vitroni's home, you know.
Yeah, or knew someone who knew him and... Mm. I don't know, something like that maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know, bizarre.
It's so bizarre.
Well, it looks like a nice place.
Yeah, no, it does. I mean, the fashion in the film is like incredible as well.
Yeah, those is it like plaid flares she's
the
wearing?
The tartan flares. I keep going on about them all the time. But, like, coffee style, you know, Foxy Brown style, you know, all this blaxploitation style is just incredible. It's so good.
Mm.
It's just like so bright, like patterns, like it's really, really great.
Yeah, they all look impressive. Fantastic, don't they? Yeah. Apart from King George's frog eye.
Frog eye. But he's like, as we said, his outfit is incredible. As
yeah.
Well.
And just a side note, a frog eye is the male version of camel toe. Just so you know. It's I'd say it's 100 times scarier than a camel toe, to be honest with you. Yeah, it's like an angry frog on acid.
Upside down.
Yeah, just like giving you a stare down.
Oh my God.
He's a frog eye could have had its own theme tune as well.
Yeah, as I said, like the fashion in the film, I love it. It's just like very sleazy, cheesy 70s fashion.
Yeah.
Bad polyester.
Yeah, like if you made
itchy wool.
If you made a film nowadays that's set around that same time, you'd never be able to
Oh God no.
Make the exact same type of style of clothing.
So Patrick.
Yes.
Sorry.
Don't call me that. It's so weird.
So, Pat.
Yeah.
What do you think about Coffee?
I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. It was my second time watching it now.
Yeah, it was my third time.
Okay, yeah. I remember the first time I saw you watching it on Netflix and I was a bit like, what are you watching?
Yeah, you're like, this is weird.
It was back when I wasn't really into these sort of films, you know, exploitation movies and B-movies.
Yeah.
Now you've brainwashed me.
I did.
I don't know any better really, you know. But yeah, I love this one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Pam Grier is just an incredible woman. Amazing actress.
Yeah.
She really makes you, like, you know, care about her and really want her to succeed in what she wants to do.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Yeah,
so it makes you feel when she's emotional, you feel with her, like you feel emotional as well.
Yeah, yeah,
you feel all the feelings she's kind of feeling. You know,
there's only a thing with like these sorts of movies, like exploitation movies and just, you know, the whole thing of like, I always like have this, it must just be cinema brain in me where I'm just like, it doesn't, like, things aren't, like, going how they're meant to, like, the way people are acting and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm fighting in my head. I'm like, this is bad. But no, it's actually really great.
Yeah, that's the thing with these kind of films, like, B-movies, cult films, and exploitation, blaxploitation films, they're made in that kind of way.
Mm.
So it's, for someone that are, like, used to modern cinema, they would never, ever, like, get into these kind of films.
Well, not never ever.
Never ever, but you know, it's very hard for them to get into.
Yeah, yeah. You got to persevere with them. Mm. You know, you got to see them for what they are.
Yeah, and I feel it's such a shame because you're missing out on really good, like, really good films.
Yeah, and important films, you
important
know.
Important
like,
films with important messages
yeah, like,
as well.
Like, you know, with Coffee, I never realised how much of an impact this film had on, like, when it came out.
Yeah.
It was such a huge deal for, you know, the sort of African-American community in America.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was such a huge deal for them to see, like, a...
Finally.
Yeah, to see, like, a black woman in a lead role.
Shooting white men.
Yeah, and just, yeah, so that's when you sort of read up on these things and you see the backstory behind them and, you know, you see what blaxploitation means to people and what it was.
Yeah.
And how important it was. You know, you see past those like little faults in the, like where maybe like the acting isn't so great or like the editing's like a bit shoddy and like,
yeah, they just cut this and did this now.
Yeah, or like the fight scenes are a bit like, you know, uncoordinated and stuff.
Mm.
You know, you've really just got to buy into, that's our other way to feel about films, that regardless of what they are anyway, you've got to buy into the world that they're presenting you. And no matter what, you have to try and like appreciate what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's a story they're telling and they want you to like understand it.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. Especially, you know, coming from a white person who grew up in Southeast London, you know, I don't know, like the struggles of like African American people in America during the 70s, you know.
Yeah.
But you've got to educate yourself on that and
definitely
expose yourself to those worlds to see what it's like. So Coffee, yeah, I was so shocked to find out all this stuff about it and really see what it was, because I just thought, you know, oh, it's a blaxploitation film, it's got Pam Grier in it, you know, it's gonna be
nothing
like,
else, you know.
Yeah, there's not like much to it, you know, it's fun, it's silly,
action film,
yeah, sexy,
yeah,
like, see,
but it was so much more.
It was so much more, yeah. So I was really surprised by it, and I do really enjoy it.
Yeah,
and you know, I've constantly got the Coffee soundtrack going around in my head.
Coffee is the color.
Yeah. Every day it just like pops into my head when they're like, coffee.
Or they're like, coffee, baby.
Yeah. I would love for me to have my own theme tune, you know. Everyone always says that, you know,
Patrick,
when you're walking down the street.
Patrick.
Yeah, maybe not that because it sounds a bit seedy for some reason.
What was the Shaft song we played in the shop today?
Shaft. Yeah.
You know, the Shaft theme. And I was just like, who's the...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Pat.
Pat.
You're damn right.
Bad mother, shut your mouth.
Yeah. But I'm talking about Pat.
Pat.
And he can dig it. Oh, Christ.
I love it. Love it.
Yeah, but I really enjoyed this film. I'm looking forward to watching Foxy Brown at some point.
Yeah, you like Foxy
Brown.
The
unofficial sequel.
It's very similar to Coffee.
Yeah, I think I've seen clips and stuff.
Mm.
So yeah, I'm looking forward to watching that. But yeah, I really enjoyed this. What did you think?
Well, as I said before, it's one of my favourite films.
Mm.
Well, like at the moment. But yeah, it's something... Coffee was one of the first blaxploitation films I watched. And I just got really hooked into the genre.
Mm.
And really hooked on Pam Grier.
Mm.
I just thought she was so incredible.
Yeah.
And you know, from someone as a teenager, well, not teenager, like, you know, early, in the early 20s, watched Kill Bill and thought the greatest revenge film of them all.
Yeah.
God, I was wrong. Now I know so many more. Like,
it's a good one.
It's good.
You know what? It's a good homage to those movies. That's
definitely
what it is.
But it's more funny now when you've seen, like, the films, kind of seen the films are, like...
Yeah, like the
seeds,
the source.
Yeah, the seeds
source
of
yeah,
the,
those, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I absolutely love this film. I think the soundtrack is amazing. Pam Grier, God, she is really, really good. I think the acting is great in this film as well. It's nothing really, I'm just like, ugh, that was bad. I just really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously some sleazy, sexy scenes, you know, and yeah, the only thing I'm annoyed about is just like her dick boyfriend, Howard.
Right.
It was the only thing I kind of got irritated by.
Yeah, but he gets his comeuppance at the end.
Sorry?
He gets, you know, she gets her own back on him.
Yeah, yeah. No, for sure.
She blows off his frog eye.
Yeah. I just love a good, like, female revenge film. It's it's like...
Same.
From this kind of era, you know, we had... You got Coffee, you had I Spit on Your Grave. Thriller, A Cruel Picture.
Yeah, which is, I think now, one of my favourite films of all time.
Thriller, A Cruel Picture, yeah. No, same, definitely. Like, it's the best revenge film. And we are going to talk about that film.
I can't wait to talk about that film, because I absolutely love it.
How great it is. Like, it's a Swedish revenge film as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so great.
Which was another influence on Quentin Tarantino.
Quentin Tarantino, yeah. God, he's such a copycat, isn't
he? He's a thief,
really.
Yeah.
He's a thief. He's just, like, stealing everything and putting it together.
Yeah.
Thinks it's his. No, but also because in the Bloody Kill Bill, he has, like, you know, Lady Snowblood, he's got, like, Giallo, he's got, like, everything, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, paying homage to it, ain't he?
Yeah. So much. But,
and, you know, someone watches Kill Bill, and they're like, oh, I wonder where he got influenced, and then they go back to the films that he was influenced. So that's how they get into these films.
True.
The circle of life.
The circle of films. I really, really liked it.
Good.
You know I do.
Yeah.
I always rave about it. I always sing the theme tune.
Yeah.
I can't wait to watch more like films by Pam Grier as well. I actually haven't seen Friday Foster or Sheba Baby. I feel like there's some other ones. Yeah, The Arena I haven't watched. Bad Mama, White... No, Black Mama.
Black
sorry.
Mama, White Mama.
Black Mama, White Mama.
We watched that.
Yeah, we watched that. Yeah. It's really good.
It's a good one.
On all those kind of like, you know, women in prison films.
Yeah.
Really, really good as well. But I can really recommend Coffee. If you've never seen a blaxploitation film, I think Coffee is a really good one to start with.
It's a good intro. It's a good intro, yeah.
It's not too violent. Mm. It's not too, you know, sleazy, sexy, like,
no, but
rapey.
It's easy to follow.
It's easy to follow. Yeah, as I said, good soundtrack and that. And just take it with a pinch of salt if you're not used to these kind of, like, old films. Mm. Just take it as it is.
Yeah.
And just, like, yeah, it's just got a good, really good message and good story now. You know?
Yeah, it does, yeah. It definitely does.
It gets a 10 out of 10 for me.
Oof.
Yeah.
Oh God. Spicy.
No, for sure. I think it's the best.
Fair enough.
Yeah. What about you?
I'd give it a 8.
8?
Yeah. It's like a 7 or an 8 for me.
A strong 8?
No, I'd say like it's, you know, a strong end to the 7. You know, it's like a 7.999.
Okay.
8. Because I do love it, yeah.
Good.
Yeah, I didn't know where I was going with that. I got confused. I'm so tired.
Oh my god! I can see your eyes has turned into Simpsons eyes now.
Yeah.
We always say that when one of us is tired, it's like you got Simpsons eyelids. Well, guys, all you people listening to us right now, I hope we haven't been too like all over the place with this episode.
Yeah.
We literally been working our asses off in this bloody shop and been trying to have time to sit down and do this amazing episode of this amazing film, and I really hope we did our best.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, hope you enjoyed it. Hope you've watched the film. If you haven't, then go and watch it.
Yeah, I think it used to be on Netflix UK.
Yeah, I don't know if it's still on there or not.
Not sure.
No, but you can watch it on Amazon. They'll have it on their like Arrow Video channel if you've got that.
Yeah, you can buy on Blu-ray like we did.
Yeah,
it's got really good special features in it.
And that's the thing with Arrow DVDs, is like a double cover.
Yeah.
So it's really cool.
It's really cool to collect. I mean, we're not really, I'm sorry to say, like these nerds. It's nothing bad being Blu-ray nerds, but we don't really like, you know, collect too many films at home.
No, we don't. No, we sort of pick and choose which ones we want on Blu-ray, don't we?
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm sure you might be able to find like a fairly good stream maybe on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
But you do want it to be really good quality though, because just down to the fact that, you know, you want to see the movie basically, because, you know, there's all the colours and the detail on certain things.
Yeah, like that time we watched Savage Streets.
So, yeah, you got it right this time.
Yeah. Street. I was like, I hope I'm not saying
wrong. Yeah.
But that was on Amazon, but God, what horrible quality it was on that one.
No, it's the sound, weren't it? The sound wasn't mixed properly.
So
yeah.
It was like a washing machine. It was just like Anyway,
But yeah, thanks again guys for listening and subscribing and liking and passing this on to friends and family. If you haven't already, then sort your life out. Otherwise I'll come find you. Because that's what we do in South East London.
Why are the fireworks now? So weird. Anyway, we're going to wrap it up now. All right. Do you want to announce the next film we're going to talk about?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I just almost forgot about it.
Yeah, me too. I'm so tired. I can't even think anymore.
Yeah, so the next film we're going to be doing is the 1982 action crime drama thriller.
B-movie.
Explosion in your face. Mark Lester classic. The Class of 1984.
Yeah.
It's going to be a good one, I think.
I think it'd be a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that film.
Yeah, yeah, same.
And it's got a really good music score by Alice Cooper.
Oh, God, yeah, it's brilliant.
So good. Yeah, and I don't think there's anything else to say, really, than...
No.
Thanks so much again for listening to us. We really appreciate it.
Mm.
Thanks for all your support. And yeah, so I think that's everything.
Yep, that's all from us.
That's all from us. So stay tuned.
Yeah, we'll see you again in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah,
keep those ears peeled.
Yep. Bye.
Bye-bye.